My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners tuning in from 165 countries around the world, about a million listens a month. And today, at the beginning of 2021, we hope we have a bunch of new listeners, returning old listeners and friends listening to this episode of Tech Bites, the weekly show where we talk to innovators and influencers in the food tech space. And I know I say this every week, but I am really happy to have this collection of guests with us today. It's a milestone episode for lots and lots of reasons. Today, we are going to talk with some of the winners from this year's Forbes Under 30 list, the 2021 list. So it's great to kick the year off with something really celebratory. It's the 10th annual list that Forbes has done. We have some really fantastic entrepreneurs and food people on the show today. Some you've heard, some new ones for you to meet. And it's also worth noting that in the Tech Bites world, 6 years ago in January in 2015, episode number one of Tech Bites was the Forbes Under 30 list for that year. And we kicked it off that way. And so it's nice to come back and see how the list has evolved over the years. The other interesting point worth noting is that last year, when we talked about the Forbes Under 30 list for 2020, that was episode 199, that was the last episode we did live in the studio inside Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And coming back onto the show, who was there last year and who's there today, is Chloe Servino, who's a staff writer at Forbes, who works on the food and drink Under 30 list. Chloe, thank you for joining us remotely on Zencastr.
Thank you so much for having me. That Roberta's Pizza Bee Sting was my last meal out, and I remember it very fondly. What a crazy time. This year, we really wanted to make sure that who we were highlighting really was representative of everything that happened in 2020. I mean, so many folks really came of age and persevered despite the odds. And it was a tough year to put together a list that, you know, has to feel so emblematic of entrepreneurship and kind of optimism in such a kind of dark times. But it was exciting nonetheless.
I can only, I can't imagine the difference between putting together this year's list and putting together last year's list. I would imagine that there are kind of two components to it. One is just the actual putting together of the list, meeting with colleagues, talking to people, meeting with some of the other people who vote, planning events. I would assume that you did all of the work now kind of remotely. And then the second piece to it, I would imagine, is, you know, this year, not only the COVID-19, you know, global pandemic, but we also had Black Lives Matter, a lot of social justice issues, the election, lots of different, you know, political, social, environmental, human reckonings that were happening. So I would imagine that that maybe interjected some ideas and discussions that maybe you didn't have last year.
It was definitely a really special year, and we took all of that really, really deeply into heart. I will say, you know, I think diversity, amplifying the right voices, sustainability, those are things that we have historically always made sure we strive for when we're putting together this list. But I mean, you know, it was such a big year that we really just wanted to make sure the folks who we were acknowledging and getting to celebrate were the ones who were so emblematic of the year, you know, had persevered despite the odds. You know, folks like author Priya Krishna, who led the reckoning within Bon Appetit about representation that catalyzed the food media world at large. You know, and then we have everyone to the, you know, the owners of 886 in the East Village and now a new location in Brooklyn, Taiwanese natives who were essentially one of the first restaurants in all of New York City to set up a meal donation system for frontline healthcare workers. You know, during some of the pandemic's darkest days, you know, living here throughout all of this, we really just wanted to make sure that we could capture the spirit of that survival and that, you know, optimism that they really had in the pandemic's darkest days and through, you know, all of the other really tough moments that kind of, you know, was a confluence in the past year. And I will say, for your first question too, I know I didn't answer that yet, but it was a crazy year for it because usually we're spending the entire year, you know, going to different trade shows, meeting with different events, hearing from all these different investors about other folks we should be meeting, doing, you know, vineyard visits. I've done so many different random places. And this year was completely all virtual. We usually do a tasting where all of our judges meet in New York City for a day and we go through every single candidate, business plan, all the financials that we've vetted. And get to taste anything that we can, depending on the type of candidate. And this year, you know, obviously we couldn't do that, but we had really dedicated judges in Molly Ye, who's on the Food Network, and Marcus Samuelson and Lee Schrager, who set up the Food and Wine Festival in New York and South Beach. So we were really lucky for that reason, and we all just kind of went above and beyond to try to find the best standout up-and-coming superstars, young folks, to, you know, be able to bring us all the optimism that we really, you know, have needed.
Well, it's definitely perfect timing for this type of list, and the fact that it's the 10th annual list is also great because it grounds it, I think, in, you know, history and some hindsight. So it doesn't, you know, it's not like, oh, let's just have a big party so we can all, you know, celebrate something and feel better. The other thing that's notable, I think, about this list is, and just generally, it reminds us that there are positive growth things happening. And a lot of the 600 entrepreneurs and activists and writers and movers and shakers who are on the list raised a lot of capital, raised funds, expanded their business. So I also like the aspect, not just the positivity of highlighting and celebrating people who are doing good things. I think it's also great for us to hear collectively as an industry and as the public that there is opportunity, that things are growing, that there are still pockets of investment and expansion and things like that, which will, you know, theoretically lead to, you know, the domino effect of opportunity and economic possibility for, you know, more and more people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very true. I will say, I think we look very carefully at any founders who take on venture capital funding or, you know, any kind of sort of investment. We really want to make sure the folks who are highlighting on this list are founders, entrepreneurs. They're the ones who are driving the conversation. Obviously, there's a lot of crazy money flowing around in the food and food tech and ag tech world, specifically because it kind of is this last frontier for investors in a lot of ways. And because, to your point earlier, it is at the intersection of all of these really, really important issues, and solutions really could have systemic societal change from food justice to sustainability and farming to just nutrition and health. So that said, you know, we look to founders who are still trying to take control, who are taking investment in the right ways. Obviously, so much of this year, so much of the investment went towards founders in plant-based, and we can talk about that. But before we do, I will say that we are also really looking for the bootstrappers, the entrepreneurs who are figuring out new business models and new ways to, you know, take this kind of late capitalism world and make it work for them. I think a great example is Diaspora Co's Sana Javakadri, who is a pretty big force in the food world today. But I was really glad we got to put her on the list this year because I think her story is so really representative of like where I hope this list will go. You know, she's bootstrapped her entire company, never taken on any investment, and, you know, started it essentially in 2017 with $3,000 from her tax refund at 23 years old. She's still under 30, obviously, and you know, the way it works, it's kind of like a CSA model where, you know, a customer can invest ahead of time so that Diasporco can pay their small family farmers across India an average of 6 times more than the commodity price. And they're doing that because they can have these kind of like interesting business models and forward contracts. So I'm excited by stories like that because we're seeing how entrepreneurs are, you know, looking at traditional funding and traditional ways to grow a business and kind of turning it on its head.
Well, it is a really great time to be looking at all of these new, you know, and I suppose being on the list means they're not necessarily new, because even though they're under 30, everyone on the list has spent years working already on their project, on their profession, on their company, and they've reached a certain level of success to be notable and to be something that is foundationally secure to go forward. We are joined today by two members of the Food and Drink Under 30 list. We have Jesse Shefchek, who is writer, recipe developer, food stylist, and notably the author of Tasty Pride, a really great body of work if you have time while you're listening or afterwards to take a look at his website, J-E-S-S-E. His last name, I'm going to spell it out for you because there's lots and lots of consonants, S-Z-E-W-C-Z-Y-K.com. Beautiful photography and work, and also a look at the Tasty Pride book. Jesse, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
And we also have joining us is Michael Robinoff, who is a longtime friend and former guest of Tech Bites. He was on for the first time back in September of 2018, episode 151, where we did a show about millennial CEOs changing the world. And at that point, I think you were 25, Michael. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Michael's company is called Farm to People. And if you want to look at that while we're on the air, the website is farmtopeople.com. And essentially, it connects the farmers from the green market to consumers, where you go online and you very simply order the groceries and, you know, the type of delivery you want, whether you want a weekly subscription or you want a special event, and it comes right to you. So you don't have to go to the farmer's market, but you still get the same local farm produce. And it was a great idea back when he founded it when he was 21. Is that right? 7 years ago?
7 years ago, yeah, with my dad and partner.
And seems to be one of those things where it's the perfect business for this time. Both to Jesse and Michael. Jesse, tell us how you first heard that you were going to be on the Forbes Under 30 list and how that unfolded.
Yes. So I actually found out I was on the list just the morning that it published, but maybe several months prior, I got a DM from Mollier, who has been following me on Instagram for several years now. I remember when she followed me, I thought it was a huge deal to have someone like her follow me. I still think it is. And she just asked how old you are. And I said, I'm 29. And I saw that she was on the list prior. And I quickly learned that if you're on the list, some people can like nominate and suggest people on lists. So that thought passed my mind. And then Chloe reached out with an application, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is real. And I sent in all my information, and I didn't hear for several months. I kind of thought, you know, this is a huge honor for Molly to even consider me. But of course, this probably won't happen. I'm just like an author, a writer. This isn't like a realm I necessarily play in. And then I woke up and I was on it, and it was just a huge surprise and really great.
So Chloe, this is an instance where we have somebody who is not a business owner, but is somebody who is in the category, in this case, food and drink, that is, you know, publishing and putting forward a voice and a point of view and stories. How important is that elementally in the Forbes list, which is a little adjacent to what we typically think about because we usually think about business?
Look, I mean, we want the best people in the food world to be highlighted on this list. And I think Jesse can tell you, you know, he has to run his own business. He himself is a business. I think that's sometimes, you know, forgotten, but, you know, he's had this big cookbook that takes a lot of time and effort to be able to put that project together. He's doing all of these other contributing to different outlets, different video work. And, you know, we felt that we needed someone with a really great eye to represent food styling, but also how you could make food styling your business and your personal brand and make it, you know, your full career. And I think that's, you know, I think, especially with social media these days, business really can be anything. And, you know, just as much as, you know, we do the billionaires list at Forbes, we also do the celebrities earnings list, right? And we do like the YouTuber earning list too, for that matter. So, you know, I think we all kind of forget that we all can be our own businesses, and especially when we're doing creative projects, especially in the food world where so much is freelance and so much is per project based, that at the end of the day, you know, you are running your own book.
You know, that's a really excellent point. We often think about writers and people in the media as being people who are creative, who share a point of view, who share stories. But we don't think of them as individual, maybe mini media outlets, which to your point, they really are. And I think it was Jay-Z who famously said, I'm not a businessman, I'm the businessman. Mm. So, you know, that's a really, I think that's a salient point and one that we often forget. And I think certainly at this point in the collective consciousness, we are very aware of how powerful social media is and how that can, you know, being an influencer can be a business for sure. Michael's almost like the old under 30 on the list, I feel like, because you did start your business at such a young age. I mean, 21 years old is, you know, most people are, you know, just sort of starting to think about what they want to do with their life, and you are already digging in with a business. Do you feel like you're already an older statesman in the startup world, or do you still feel young 7 years into your business?
Oh, I still feel so young and like I'm learning so much. This whole journey of Farm to People has been one that's been, you know, very close to home in the sense that I get to work on it with my co-founder Anina, who also is on the list, and then my father, who's been, you know, a mentor to me since, you know, long before Farm to People was something that we were all working on. And so food, and I've said this on prior episodes, but food is something that's so personal and means so much to me, just from, you know, my family history and what I grew up around, that being able to, like, you know, do that and tell the stories of our makers and farmers on Farm to People is an incredible, you know, I guess an incredible job. And so, yeah, I think to me, this is waking up and seeing myself on Forbes and seeing, you know, Anina there with me and them mentioning my father, it really just was a really great milestone in this journey that has been a lot longer than a lot of those other superstars who, you know, I'm humbled to be on a list with. Like, this is definitely, and you've seen us go through different, we've pivoted and reimagined our business, you know, more times than I can probably count on one hand over the last 7 years, which is not uncommon, but certainly, like you've said, has I guess seasoned me a little bit, but also given me that much more joy to be where we are today, because it at times over the last 7 years has felt like I would never, you know, see the business get to this point. And I think that's a lot about, you know, and I see this in other people on the list, but and I'm sure Chloe sees a ton of this, but is really just persistence and continuing on even when it may not even be a good idea. But sometimes life just has a weird way of if you listen to what your customers are saying or others are saying and take those cues, I feel like yeah, over the years, that's led me personally in a fulfilling direction, and sometimes the right direction.
I will say that Michael and Anina are actually really great examples of folks who we have looked at over the years and felt like we really got to know as they have done those pivots and changed the business model. And, you know, when we looked at the application and all the information and the growth again this year, you know, with everything going on, we just felt like this was the right time to be able to put on, you know, a direct to consumer farmers market delivery service. And just the growth that they had achieved really had made it clear that this was the moment for this company. So I think, you know, folks don't really know, but you know, there are some entrepreneurs who will literally look at for years. There's several that, you know, I've been looking at three or four years at this point who we may not ever put on, or we might put on in five more years for that matter. And the persistence and getting to know the persistence and the pivots over time is really important.
Well, it's definitely worth noting that on this show, we talk to so many founders and CEOs of startup companies, and there's a large number of them that come on the show at the beginning of their journey with their business, and a lot of those companies don't exist anymore for a variety of reasons. And you know, to be able to say you've been looking at a company or looking at people over the past few years and this is the year, I mean, perseverance in the startup world, especially in food and drink, is definitely something. It's sort of almost, you know, if you're still standing in some respects, a few years in and your business is still growing and evolving, that in and of itself is a great sign. We're going to take a quick break right now and find out who is helping Heritage Radio Network continue to stay on the air and evolve. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We are kind of like public radio. We keep the lights on and the mics hot out of donations from our members, who are mostly listeners like you, grants, and underwriters like this one. Stay with us.
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Wisconsin cheese has proven time and time again to be a delicious expression of craft, hard work, and tradition. As a Cheeselandian, I am able to share a Gouda experience with fellow cheese and food lovers nationwide, as well as connect with cheese producers and cheesemongers, taking my love of cheese to another level. I invite you to join Cheeselandia because during these difficult times, it has been even more important to take it easy and get cheesy. The Cheeselandia community and events have been the glue helping to keep us together and connected, and I would love it if you would join me. And let's face it, if you hear the word cheese and get a little hungry, then you've found a place you can call home. To find out more about Cheeselandia, go to cheeselandia.com.
Hello, this is Dana Cowan, and I'm the host of Speaking Broadly on Heritage Radio Network. Each week, I interview extraordinary women in the world of food and wine. And I've expanded this season to create Giving Broadly, a website devoted to amazing products by extraordinary women entrepreneurs. Check it out for great gifts and ways to amp up your cooking this season. That's givingbroadly.com.
Well, we are Tech Bites, and we are talking about the Forbes Under 30 list for 2021, which is a great moment to be celebrating some of the visionaries and business owners and people who are really pushing the food and drink industry forward. We are speaking with Chloe Savino, who's staff writer at Forbes, who's been one of the writers working on the list, return guest to Tech Bites. We are also talking with two of the under 30s, Jesse Shefcheck, who's writer, recipe developer, food stylist, and author of Tasty Pride, and Michael Robinoff, who is co-founder and CEO of Farm to People. Jesse and Michael, you know, part of being on a list like this is a recognition of the work that you have done. But I think it's also a big spotlight to see what work you are going to do in the future. I definitely think the impetus of the Forbes Under 30 list is, you know, change going forward as well. So I'll ask each of you, you know, we're really at the beginning of 2021 now. What do each of you see coming this year in the future, both for yourselves individually and then for your corner of the food industry? Jesse?
Sure. So I'll start with the corner of my food industry, because I think being on the list represents really everyone who worked on the book, like primarily the contributors. Like the point of Tasty Pride was to highlight 75 queer voices within the food community. And I think like this spotlight on the Forbes list is a spotlight on all of us. And I think projects like this are rare because they're not necessarily like big money makers for BuzzFeed Tasty or for Clarks and Powder. But I think this shows that not only is this important to highlight new voices in food media and publishing, but it's also good business. Like, these things get recognition, and external validation for these projects is important. So I think something like this could help launch new projects like this, kind of like justify publishing houses taking more risks, bringing on people from different perspectives who aren't necessarily working in media already. So I really hope that kind of sends a message to these publishing houses. Personally, I mean, I just want to work on more books. That's my dream. As of today, I'm sending out a first solo proposal, so I'm really excited about that. But I mean, ultimately, I just want everyone who is in Tasty Pride to kind of like share the celebration with me, because it's not me on the list, it's all of us.
The book did raise a significant amount of money for GLAAD, though, didn't it?
I mean,
it's not financially successful either.
Yes, totally. Like, the book, so $25,000 was donated from both BuzzFeed and then Random House, so $50,000 total. And then additionally, everyone who worked on the book was paid. So all 75 contributors were paid for their work, which sounds like, of course they are, but if you look at this business model, like these contributor cookbooks, that's not the norm, and it's quite rare. And then additionally, like, the designer was a queer designer too, we brought on, of course they're all paid. So it was really about like reinvesting in the community in all different ways.
That's definitely another conversation, and something that is perhaps a part of the, you know, larger stories about the food industry, and, you know, some stories about the media, where I think a lot of the public doesn't necessarily understand is aware of sometimes how economically these things are not really viable for people in terms of what you've just said, in terms of contributor fees or lack thereof. There's quite a bit of, you know, do it for the glory and the publicity and do the work for free that happens sometimes in these things. So I think it, you know, it's great to point out how this was financially viable, and it was financially supporting the people who worked on it. And I think that goes to Chloe's point earlier, where we maybe don't realize people who are in media are, you know, small, almost like small independent little media outlets. Michael, what do you see at Farm to People for this year, and maybe specifically for your business, and then maybe for the category going forward? We had a great conversation prior to the show, and one of the things we talked about was, you know, your business just being kind of the perfect business for right now in so many ways.
Yeah, certainly. I think obviously we're extremely fortunate to have, you know, a business model that really fit into the needs of today. But that said, I also feel incredibly like alive and driven by the moment and by our mission, and really at its core, I want to make sure that as this continued mass adoption of e-commerce grocery shopping and you know, ever more convenient grocery delivery services kind of compete and take each other out, from, you know, Amazon to Walmart to Instacart, that there really is a company out there that is doing something really with the earth and local farmers and regenerative agriculture at the top of our minds and with purpose. And so, you know, I think while we have visions of growing and growing much, much larger than we are today, it's never at the expense of our driving mission. And that's really, you know, over this coming year going to be about, you know, connecting with more small farmers and driving meaningful innovation in crop planning and transitional farming. So many farms are looking to not only organic agriculture, but also regenerative agriculture. And you know, I mean, the whole space, that whole, all of that, fortunately, is really gaining a lot of publicity over the last few years. I would say from even during the pandemic, you know, a documentary like Kiss the Ground that, you know, Netflix produced really shows the power of this type of conscious rotational agriculture. And how it can sequester carbon and all of that. And so really Farm to People is like a vehicle, but the mission of climate change and being a company that can do right by its partners, its employees and its customers is something that as we've all seen, you know, it has taken 7 years to get to where we are today and really is about the long term. You know, as Chloe mentioned earlier, there are a lot of companies or founders on the list that have raised significant capital. And then there are some of us that have gone, I guess, more the path of bootstrapping and I guess refining our models as we go. And it's a little bit more of a patient approach, but definitely has its ups and downs. But I definitely feel really, yeah, I guess driven by the moment. We've been really lucky to be doing well. I'm one of the businesses in New York City that's been so hit hard by this pandemic. And I don't take that lightly. And I want to position that strength and do greatness with it over the years to come.
Well, I'm sure Forbes will be keeping tabs on you because part of each annual list is looking at some of the alumni who are continuing to stand out. Chloe, this is the 10th annual list, which seems amazing also. Along with it, there are some additional events and things that you all have planned for the year. Yes?
Yeah, well, you know, we obviously had to push back our second summit in Detroit, which was supposed to be in October. We'll be there, I believe, for 3 more years, and hopefully the summit will still be happening this year. But in replacement of that, we have been focusing on kind of featuring alumni who have really been standouts, especially from like that first list. Throughout the year, and we're going to be just doing a lot of, you know, networking and I believe at least in the beginning of the year, virtual events around this 10th anniversary, because it really is a big deal for us and we've been very excited about it.
And what types of things are you looking at? When do you start working on the list for 2022? What types of things do you think are going to bubble up this year in terms of trends or types of businesses or consumer behaviors and things like that? What are you seeing going into the 2022 list?
Yeah, I mean, we're always looking. I always have a running list on my phone of different candidates, just either from the past years that we are still continuing to check up on or new folks. I mean, I'm getting inbounds and different ideas from sources literally all the time. And while, you know, we still won't be going to trade shows this year, I am confident that we'll have some great folks. I think there'll be a lot more, you know, there was a lot of funding going into specific food and ag tech this year for specific problems that came around COVID. And I'm excited to see what some of the, you know, the fruits of those technologies bring to bear this year. And, you know, especially getting into the later half of the year. I also think, you know, in terms of food brand, just, you know, the kind of the classic food brand, you know, grocery brand or a direct-to-consumer brand that's on the Forbes list. Health, nutrition, that is all completely here to stay. And we've done a lot over the years to refine, you know, how we think about the ingredients that we're, you know, supporting, you know, through the founders that we're supporting. And, you know, there's a lot of crazy stuff in food engineering that honestly could be a whole other topic for another day. But we're very interested in continuing to see, like, folks doing no sugar alternatives or, you know, just things that are going to make people healthier, but also be more accessible. And, you know, I think honestly there could be a lot more done with accessibility. So I'm hoping that there are some more founders there. There's definitely the impetus for it this year with 50 million Hungarians, including 17 million children.
Yeah. Yeah, there's still so much work to be done in so many arenas. I will ask all of you sort of to that point. You know, Chloe, you talked about some of the trends in terms of accessibility and food and health. You know, Jesse, you're talking about, you know, social, you know, awareness and of different, you know, groups and some of the social justice issues. Michael, you're talking about, you know, environmental issues and food chain and distribution. Do you think that in this moment in time, because we are spending so much time at home, because we are in such a state of emergency, people are conscientious of these things and they are wanting to make an impact, vote with their dollars, you know, protest, join groups, make the right choices, you know, maybe change things. Do we think this awareness and these shifts in consumer behavior are going to be lasting beyond this time of crisis? Do we think that people will continue to be interested in, you know, where their food comes from and things being equitable? Do we think that people will be interested in supporting, you know, different, you know, different social groups? Do we think that these things are here to stay and we're witnessing also an evolution to this sort of next level of, you know, participation and awareness? Or do we think that this goes away when things go back or move towards what the new normal will be?
Absolutely. I think that this is the new normal. And I think that it needs to be continued to be pushed by businesses leading the way as well. So I think it's really important that we recognize issues in our communities and don't stand by silently and be agnostic. I think the past 4 years have shown that, you know, businesses and customers, you know, ultimately customers have a large say on what kind of change they want to see in the world. And businesses and leaders should also have a vocal opinion about all of that. I think that, you know, as the pandemic has kind of and really hit New York so quickly and so suddenly early on, that like, for Farm to People, we looked around at our team and a lot of the folks that we hired were coming from the restaurant industry and really found a home with us. And our team is an incredible community of amazing people. And then beyond our team, we were looking at communities and how we as a conduit for nutritious food could help with any excess food or with distribution to empower other groups. Whether it was, you know, Rethink, which is an amazing organization here in New York City, or Food Issues Group, or Playground Coffee Shops, which is like one of the pioneers in setting up all of the community fridges around Brooklyn, and they're growing. And so we every weekend we're helping them restock those fridges so that people in need can go get those food. And then Soulfire Farm up in upstate New York, we've raised over $15,000 for them to help them empower minorities to get back on the farm and learn how to grow food. And so everything that as a business that we can do to drive that change in the world, whether it's, you know, personal or as an entity, I think it's so vital for the future of business, frankly. I don't think one can exist without the other. But that's evolved a lot in my mind over the year. And that's really where I think new businesses will thrive and shine. Otherwise, the marketplace is just too crowded.
Jesse, do you think that these different, do you think that the current sort of public awareness and enthusiasm for different issues and groups is something that is a resetting and here to stay? Do you think that's going to go away? Is this sort of like a pop of a trend of consciousness, or do you think that this is just sort of the new landscape?
I think in food media specifically, I think change has only kind of just started. And I think, you know, individuals like Priya, who was on the list, showed that if there's something wrong in the food media or your industry, like speaking up can actually lead to like true systemic changes. And although it's scary within food media, there will be editors, freelancers who will like stand behind you and also be like, I have experienced the same things and I support you. So I don't think there's, you know, this isn't going to be like, oh, food media is fixed. Like we're going to have like true representation and equality and pay. And, but I do think there's small changes that are taking place that is going to make food media a better industry as a whole. And I think, you know, you can credit to a lot of things that have happened this year and people who spoke out.
Chloe, do you think that, you know, sort of the consumer behaviors that we've been seeing over the course of this year and sort of the general public, you know, in many cases, renewed awareness or enthusiasm for things like environmentalism and, you know, regenerative farming, are these things that are going to be built upon for next year? Do you think that we're going to change lanes and shift to new things as time goes by? Or is this really... you know, sort of plateauing and then coming up and then plateauing again and things that are going to continue into the future?
You know, I really hope they do continue. I think my biggest fear is that they don't. You know, I think it'll be really hard for a lot of folks, especially, you know, just from, again, being here in New York, you know, having the moments of really worrying, like if, you know, how our food supply chains would be impacted. And, you know, I made a lot of really drastic changes myself personally, sourcing from pretty much entirely a CSA. That way we're supporting a farmer, giving them money up front so they, you know, can plan ahead for the long term. And, you know, I pretty much just live off of whatever the CSA gives us at this point. I think that's a little extreme. And I know a lot of folks, unfortunately, you know, the third wave and the pandemic fatigue has, you know, a lot of folks are going back to getting their, you know, South American, you know, gassed cherry tomatoes at the supermarket when it's not in season. And, you know, I don't know. I think we can get a little crazy with it. I really hope that we're all thinking about our consumption in really thoughtful ways going forward. You know, I got really excited today seeing the New York Times alert about 10% GHG emissions being down this year for the first time since so much travel and the, you know, economic, you know, just activity had decreased this year. It's obviously still not enough, but I am hopeful that folks are thinking about, you know, the billionaires aren't going to save us. Where is our food coming from? Are there local sources? Are there sources I can rely on in a crisis? Climate change will only continue to exacerbate these already rickety industrial supply chains. And, you know, I think there is a moment that a lot of consumers really could make long-term changes. I think it also really will depend on what happens when restaurants reopen and people start eating back more at home. Will we have so much fatigue that we just completely forget what it's been like, or will we continue? I think there'll be a significant amount of folks who continue.
Agreed. There are, you know, of course we're still in the middle of it. We're still in the throes of it. We don't quite know where we are in the timeline of the impact of the pandemic and all the other, you know, political and social issues that are happening right now. It's hard to know where we are until we get a little further out, and then we can look back and say, oh, that was the middle, or that was the end, or hopefully we won't be saying that's the beginning. But hopefully, you know, with awareness just comes a shift. And hopefully once people know it, you know, different things about where their food comes from or how authors and writers are paid or not paid, or, you know, how much more wholesome and healthier, you know, your local farm is, or how much more security and stability you can have by supporting your local economic infrastructure. Hopefully once we're, you know, so aware of all these things, they just become the new habits and the new norms going forward. It's a great list to look at. If you're at home, go to Forbes.com. It's the under 30. There are 600 entrepreneurs, activists, CEOs, founders, writers, creative people across 20 categories. It's a great thing to scroll through and spend your time on. It's nice to have positive media to balance everything out and maybe get to know some of the different companies. Real quickly, just to close it all out with everyone, for Jesse and Michael, what has been the best and most surprising thing about being on the Forbes Under 30 list so far? Jesse?
I mean, honestly, just being on it, like I said, this is not something I ever strived to be on or dreamed of, because it just felt completely out of realm, something I could never achieve. And it just feels good that the book was recognized, because so many of the authors in the book are first time people publishing recipes who are just like heroes in their own community, but not necessarily like on a national stage. And it's so great that these people are being recognized. And it's so great to be on the list, because, you know, next year I can nominate someone else who's on the book, and then they can nominate someone else who's in the book, and it could just like the shine theory of the book can pass on forever. So that's what I'm most excited about.
That's so awesome, Jesse. I'm going to log right in after this and buy a book. And it's really cool to hear your story, and congrats on everything.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think similarly for me, just I think the connect, it's so gratifying to feel like, you know, the years of work are meaningful professionally, and to be on a list like that is really so, so cool. I also just heard from this has been to speak a little bit about this year has been so heads down and isolating and scary, and all of these things that we've all experienced probably, you know, on this show. And to have friends that I haven't talked to in years reach out, or family members, cousins that, you know, you've just been isolated from. There was really no Thanksgiving, and it came out right after Thanksgiving. It was a really just amazing way to reconnect with people, and obviously such an honor.
Well, that's a great way to start the year, or I guess end last year and then start this year. And it's a great way to start the season. And, you know, so far, knock wood, it was a pretty great way to start the Tech Bites show. I want to thank Chloe Servino, writer at Forbes, for joining us again to talk about the Forbes Under 30 list. I want to thank Jesse Shevchek, writer, recipe developer, food stylist, and author of Tasty Pride, one of the fabulous Under 30s. And Michael Robinoff, again, friend of Tech Bites and return guest as well, co-founder and CEO of Farm to People, who started the business when he was 21. So, I mean, I just want to say congratulations to everybody. And I think, you know, it's great to be celebrating something. It's also great for young people listening right now. We've done many shows with the Food and Finance High School of New York City, for example, some of the senior students and things like that, who are just a short jump away from where Michael was when he started his business at 21 years old. So there's lots of potential. There's lots of potential out there. And who knows, maybe a young person listening today will be the person that Michael or Jesse nominates in years to come. I want to thank the sponsors of the show, all of our members, and most importantly, the staff at Heritage Radio Network, like Matt Patterson, who is our engineer, for continuing to make this show and all the shows possible. We record via Zencastr remotely. We publish using Simplecast, and we keep the lights on, the mics hot, and the stories coming. If you like this show and you want to hear more, come back and listen to us again. Even better, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a great review. That'll really help our ratings and bubble up and create a lot more interest in the show and the network. If you really, really want to show us your support, go to heritageradionetwork.org, click the beating heart, and make a donation. Maybe what you spent on vegetables this week or a cup of coffee or a pizza. If you designate it to Tech Bites, I will send you a gift along with my undying love. I'm Jennifer Liuzzi, and this is Tech Bites. Tech Bites is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Just enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.